folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here. Teresa, I was wondering if we should record an episode on end of year reflection, because I know both you and I do extensive reflection sessions the next few weeks. I'm about to start mine really soon, and I guess you too. So maybe we can share some tips and tricks how we do it with the folks out there that help them to do theirs.
Yeah, let's get into this. I love this topic because I think for me personally, what it's done is it allows me like every year to take a little bit of time and think about like, how do I continue to craft a business and even life, because I do it for personal stuff too, that like works best for me, right? So like it's a very continuous improvement kind of activity that I think, like, I know it's really trendy now to do these things, so I suspect a lot of people already do something like this. But I also think it's really fun to hear what other people do, because over the years, so I've been doing this probably for 20 years. And
wow.
I borrow bits and pieces from other people when I learn about what they do. And so now I have this like really custom process that's unique to me. But I think it'd be fun to share our processes, because like I always like cherry pick from other people, and like I'm always evolving mine.
Yeah. And can you maybe, how did I start about, what was your question? Go for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how did you start this practice? And then I'll share the same, and then we can kind of get into what we actually do.
Yeah, you know, I'm a bit of a nerd. And how I started the practice is basically, back in the days, I was still using paper calendar, paper notebooks, all these kind of things. And I really enjoyed surrounding myself at the end of the year with all these things. So all the paper documents that throughout the year document what I've done. So the vacations, the trips, work assignments, colleagues that I met. So whatever it is, even my address book, basically. So what are new people that are added to my address book, and how do these people contribute to my life? Is it bringing me more joy or more distraction or whatever it was? And it was always super paper-based, and I was not sharing it publicly. And I have started sharing it publicly. I'm not fully sure. I would need to check that, but I think like 5 or 6 years ago. Because it holds me accountable to some extent. And I think it really helps others to see how many things we're balancing. And I always even try to share some of the struggles in the annual reflection. Sometimes I don't want to share them throughout the year, but then at the end of the year, I'm like, oh, this was a big part of my life. So maybe it does make sense to even share that I overcome this hurdle or all these kind of things. But it started all with the paper. And it started with, there is an amazing book called Dear Data, where two people send each other postcards about random things they agreed upon on a weekly basis for a year or something like that. It's more like an arts project.
Oh, amazing.
And I wanted to do something similar than those two. I think Georgina Lupi and Stephanie Posabek. I don't know if I pronounced the names correctly, but those two started me on this journey to visualize it and draw my year in retrospective in a really creative way. And from there, it became this annual reflection that I put on my blog every year, which is more, a more visual, a more public version of it. But still, it's personal. So I talk about all the struggles and achievements and things that I liked and things that did not work out. And yeah. And what about you? What's your process? How did it start? Did it start in public? Did you start 20 years ago to put stuff online? Okay.
No. No. I still don't do very much of it publicly. I do a little bit of it publicly. So I don't remember how I started on this. I think I'm a reflective person just by nature. And I'm trying to think about how early I started doing this. I think in my very first job, I had a boss tell me, like, I had way too much work to do. And I had a boss tell me, like, one of the skills you need to learn is how to communicate what you're working on and like why you have too much. Mm-hmm. And so I started like, okay, well, let me think about how I would do that. And I started like listing all the projects that I was doing and whether or not I thought they were important and how much time they were going to take. And I think by doing that, like, I was like, oh, this is actually like this like metacognitive process of like taking a step back and saying, what am I doing and why am I doing those things is really helpful. And so I think I started it in my very first job. I would just like, as preparation for like a performance review or like asking for what projects I wanted to work on next, I would just keep this like diary of the projects that I was working on and to support that review. So I think I was doing it at work really early on. It grew though, like I think I'm a goal setter by nature. And so like I started this, I think it like next moved into like fitness goals, probably like hockey, related goals, right? Things I wanted to learn. I think I have a strong learning mindset. So like maybe learning goals. And then I know distinctly when it changed and got like very serious for me. And when I really started getting rigorous about doing it every year, I read a blog by Chris Guillebeau. And for people that know Chris Guillebeau, he has actually influenced a ton of people on annual reviews. And it's because he wrote this very detailed blog post on his blog, The Art of Nonconformity. We'll see if it's still around and if we can link it in the show notes. But he outlined six different categories in which he does his annual review. And he talked about how he sets goals in each of those categories. I don't know if I'll remember all six categories off the top of my head, but it's like
that would
work,
be impressive.
Health, travel, finance. Yeah, I don't know, but you get the idea. And then around the time that I read Chris's, I also was reading about like, maybe it was Atomic Habits by James Clear, or maybe it was just stuff about goal setting. And so I started to nerd out on like outcome goals versus process goals. So like, should I set a goal of reading an hour every day, or should I set a goal of how many books I read in a year, or should I set a goal of like quality of books? And so over the years, I've kind of played with those types of things. And I like went way overboard and set way too many goals and only achieved like 30% of them. I even got to the point where like I set goals in ways that like made work not fun for me. So a few years ago, one of my annual letters, I talked about how I wasn't setting goals anymore. And I actually still don't set goals in my business. I still have outcomes. Like I still like whenever I start something or I have a focus I'm working on, like I have an outcome in mind, but I'm not setting explicit goals anymore because I'm just finding for me, it taps too much into my like achiever striving brain, which can be negative. Yeah. And it removes some of the like joy of work.
Yeah.
So now my annual review is dead simple. I do three activities. The first is I make a long list of what went well. And I do this across every aspect of my life. Like what fun trips did I go on? What awesome things happened with my dog? How are things going in my marriage? Where do we travel? What went well at work? Did I grow revenue? Did I launch new products? Did I find a new instructor? Did I start a new fun podcast with my friend Petra? Right? Just like everything, what went well.
Yeah.
And then I also do a list of what could go better. So it doesn't have to be something went bad. It could just be what could have been better. So where did things fall short of my expectations? Where did I, sometimes bad things happen. It turns out it's life. And that one is, so the first list really helps me remember that I am making progress year over year. And it helps me remember, like, even though day to day, it feels like there's a lot to do and you're not getting through it. Like when I look at that long list, I'm like, wow, I had a really good year. And then what the second list does is it helps me start to see patterns in where I have expectations that are maybe unrealistic or so it's like it's like a feedback loop to like fine tune where how I should set my expectations. And then, sometimes it like is a kick in the pants to like think about like, okay, well, if you wanted this and it didn't happen, like what can you do differently to like try again? So it's also like a feedback loop on like, what's my next at bat going to look like?
And a bit of a moment to reboot certain things, maybe even.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And you know, sometimes it's that like, I wanted to do something, but it never really made it to the top of my list. And then that's feedback to me that like, maybe you didn't really want to do this and you can just let go of the wanting, right?
Yeah.
And so that also really helps. And then the third thing I do, which is actually one of my favorite exercises, I wish I could remember where I learned it from, but it's called 100 wishes. And you just, on a blank piece of paper, or you can do it on your computer, you write down 100 wishes.
That's many.
And it's actually really hard to get to 100. And I almost never get to 100. It doesn't matter. I do this over, I do all three of these lists over like 10 days. So like, I'm constantly taking an inventory. I look at like sales. I look at blog posts. I look at projects. I look at everything. I look at what trips I went on. And so like, I'm just taking an inventory of the year. What went well? What could have gone better? And then the 100 wishes is more like a fun, like forget reality. Just write down 100 things that you want. And here's what I love about the 100 wishes exercise.
I like it.
You learn a lot about yourself, about what keeps showing up on your list year over year. And then it also turns out when you like verbalize and like write down on paper something you wish, it's almost like you're making a commitment to it. Like you're not saying you're going to get all these 100 wishes. There's plenty of things on my list that like I will never, probably never get. But it helps make some like near-term things more concrete. And so then it's really fun to look at the previous year's 100 wish list and be like, oh, which of these did I do over the course of the year? Like, do they come off?
Oh,
and then
yeah,
it's also really fun. Like once you have like 15 years of 100 wish lists, you can start to look at what keeps showing up. Like maybe you should prioritize this and make it happen.
Yeah. Oh, I really love it. I really love the playfulness, because that is something, all the things that you said, I was happily nodding along for those not watching the YouTube video, because I need to keep it playful as well, and structured on the same side. But I don't like to be too rigorous with my goals as well, because of the exact same reasons than the ones you were currently mentioning. I need these big topics that I always want to dedicate a year to something, to some extent. So this is always my plan. And I don't know who this person is who always promotes this, do one big thing each decade. What's the name of this person? I don't know. But I learned about that, and I really like the idea of what is the headline for the decade and what is the headline for my year. Because there are not so many decades you can dedicate to something, right?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting exercise and gives you more perspective. And one of our earlier episodes about setbacks, we shared this 5-5-5. You shared this 5-5-5 exercise.
It's 10-10-10, exactly.
So it's kind of similar. So what is your decade dedicated to, and what is my next year dedicated to? So that's something that I always try to do. And then I always rewatch The Power of Time Off. It's a TED video from Stefan Sagmeister, where he talks about if we would get retired a bit later and then put some of the time forward in our lives and take maybe 2 months off every once in a while, how much more fit, healthy time we would get to spend on, pet projects, traveling, all these kind of things. And that's another thing that I'd always come back to for my annual reflection, to think about, okay, is there enough time blocked off my calendar for what? And then that's the question mark. So is it learning? Is it a big project? Last year, it was the product leadership wheel, plus to some extent, the email course, where I was like, okay, I really want to dedicate a lot of time to that. I'm really inspired by doing this. I want to take it on. So let's make room for it. So these kind of things are helping me in the process. And then I have a list, and I have it on my blog, so we will make sure that we link it. It's basically 40 questions that would help you with the annual reflection.
Yeah.
And I usually don't do all 40. I tend to pick 20, because not all 40 are relevant every year. So I do a short list of them. And then that's my 100 wishes list. So I go through these 40 questions, take 20 of them, and then put that in writing to some extent. And the blog post, I always publish a blog post, and that has a structure from the previous year. So I first reflect on this year. So how did this year go? as you with what went well, what could have been better. It's a similar thing. So what of the things that I was basically writing in last year's blog post did actually happen, did come into action? Did I really follow up and follow through on and all these kind of things? So the structure of my previous year's blog post is another thing that helps me. Yeah.
You know, I think you're reminding me why I moved away from like really rigid goals. So I used to set goals in 6 categories. I'd have a lot of goals. And because I was nerding out about like outcome versus process goals, I would set a goal and then I would think about my week and like, where is this going to happen in the week? And like, I have to do these things X days a week and I got to do this X hours a week or whatever. And I found, we talked about this on a previous episode, like I can't schedule everything on my calendar. Like I need, in order for me to do my best work, I need a lot of open space to like just follow whatever is top of mind for me in that moment.
Yeah.
And so I think when I set too many goals, it feels too constricting. And I, what I really want to create is openness. And so,
nice.
I think recognizing that about myself, like one of the blog posts I love, I think it was Paul Graham of the maker schedule versus the manager schedule. Like I really have to maintain a maker schedule and like make sure that I have time to just pursue whatever is of interest to me in the moment. And that's not always consistent with setting rigid goals, but I trust that like, because like you, I'm a nerd. Like I trust that I'm going to be interested in things that will work out in the end. Right. Yeah. And so it's fine. And that mostly works. There was something else you said that like, time off. So I think also like when I set too many goals, like I am an ambitious person and like I want to learn all the things, I want to do all the things. And so I would start to like by June, I would realize like there's no way this is going to work. And I would start to like hustle. And it's like, it's not what I want to create in my life. Like I'd rather just be like, okay, what I did instead was, so somewhere in there, I shifted to like just thinking about values. So like, what are the values that I want to live each year? And for me, and I don't mean like the corporate values you put on your wall or like ethics, like those things matter. But I mean, in terms of like, what do I value when I'm like trying to plan my year or plan my life? And so for me, it's
community,
things like,
for example, just to give one.
Yeah,
example.
Exactly. So like for me, it's reading, writing, learning, making things, community, right? Like the, I have 6 of them and they are more of like, instead of having 25 goals, I have these 6 like principles. And then I can start to look, and even quarterly, I can start to reflect like, how am I doing against these values? Mm-hmm. And here's a really interesting thing. For probably my entire life, reading, and especially reading books, was one of those. And this year, I have barely read any books. And I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, why is that? Well, it's because I'm reading about AI every day. And they're like,
that's
great,
not
books
a book
on AI yet, right? So like, I'm still learning every day. And so I'm starting to realize that like, maybe it wasn't reading, it was learning. And that's the form, like I learn best by reading. But, and like, I never wanted to just read blogs because I feel like a lot of blogs can be superficial. Like I wanted to read books for the depth. But in a space where everything's brand new, people haven't written
books,
books yet.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, even with this idea of like, I'm going to commit to these values, I still have to be flexible because the world changes. And like, I don't want to, I don't want to like pull back from this thing I'm passionate about learning right now because I set this competing goal of like, go find a book to read.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's, but I think to some extent it comes with doing it more often, experience, maybe even age, that you're more gentle on yourself in general. But I, from my coaching experience, I know that of course other people work differently. So some really need the goals to remain focused or something like that. And I'm usually not a person that loses focus easily. So I have my list of things that
problem.
I want. Yeah. Focus is not my problem. Or I just recently had a nice coaching conversation where we figured out that what defocuses this person all the time is basically FOMO. So they really always have this fear of missing out. They want to be involved in every conversation and want to be, yeah, in every meeting and all these kind of things. So for them, goal setting and annual reflection, and in particular goal setting, would need to be different than for us, I think. So there are different tactics for different people. And I think it does make sense to think about, okay, how do I learn? What gets me active? What motivates me? And then find a way of annual reflection that works for that, basically.
And it will change. Like, my process has evolved so much over the years. Mm. And then I'll also share, like you, I do write a blog post, but it's a little bit different. I don't share most of my reflection publicly. I don't feel a need to do that. I know that you're not doing this in your reflection. That's not what I mean by this, but I see a lot of people, especially right now, like, sharing how much money they make on LinkedIn and like how wildly successful their consulting business is. And so I do an annual letter that is one of the outputs of my end of the year reflection process. But my goal with that letter is to do a few things. I want to give an inside look at my business and like what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. But I don't want it to be all about me and my business. I want it still to be useful for my readers. And so mm-hmm. I'm always trying to like strike that balance. So in the past, I've done this a few different ways. Like the very first one I wrote was called What I'm Saying No To This Year and Why.
Yeah, and it was all about that one. Yeah. That was amazing.
And like, that's a great theme for mm-hmm. product people. Like, we have to say mm-hmm. no to things and how we're being. So like, it was a way for me to write about how I'm applying this concept to my own business so that like mm-hmm. you get a little bit of an inside look, but it's also helpful on its own. Like another year I wrote about Now, Next, Later roadmaps, and I shared my upcoming roadmap for the year. Another year I wrote about how I set outcomes for my different courses. Mm-hmm. And just as an example of like how to be outcome driven across a portfolio of products. So like, I'm always trying to strike this balance between like having it be an annual letter that I'm going to commit to. And like, here's a look at the year ahead, but still really grounded in like showing what this practice looks like. So there's still a lesson in there. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that if you go back and read my annual letter for 2025, I have not done anything in that letter.
Oh, wow.
Like, I had a plan for the year.
Teresa. Yeah.
And I have not done anything in that letter. I don't think, I can't quite remember what went in that letter. I know I was going to like do translations of my courses and my book, have not even made a single step in that process. One of my ones was about connecting, like building stronger connections and like finding a way to deal with social media rot. And I actually feel like I have made some progress there. But you know what I didn't foresee in
by
January?
Just like retiring from social media.
Yeah, exactly. What I didn't see in December and when I was doing my planning and in January when I wrote that letter was that I was just going to get this bug about building AI products. And like, yeah. I could have been stubborn to that plan, but I've like, what's happened by me just following my interests? I built my first AI product, the Interview Coach. I launched a new podcast, Just Now Possible, where I interview teams about product. Yeah. I'm just about, like, by the time this releases, I'll be through a really detailed, in-depth series on cloud code, helping people get up to speed on this new crazy technology that has completely changed the way that I work. Right? And so, like, it's a fair trade to me. And it's exactly why I don't set rigid goals. Like,
yeah, and
I want to be able to pull on that thread and follow it.
Yeah, and I would love every product person to be able to be flexible in similar ways when it comes to their product work, right?
Yeah.
Because times are so, yeah, everything seems to be in flux this year. I have so many conversations with so many people that ended in new roles, working on new products, sunsetting products that they thought are their cash cow, whatever. So many things are happening in parallel that I think it would be wild to stick to the plan that you set for yourself 12 months ago. But what remains, and I'm happy that you shared that, is this themes, or you called them values or something like that. And for me, it's basically the headlines of the blog post that I write, for example. So learning and personal development. There should always be something under the headline learning and personal development. And yeah, maybe in January I planned for other things, but now I learned something about AI evils, for example, right? So I really like that there is a bit of structure to it, but it's more art than science.
And I think actually the part that I value more is the reflection than the planning. Like I really enjoy the looking back. Yeah. And the planning part is almost an afterthought.
Yeah. And to me, the planning part still feels like reflection.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's less about we're going to stick to this plan. It's more about like, I'm going to check in with myself on if I had to make a plan, what might it look like?
Yeah. And am I excited about the year ahead? Yeah. Am I excited about the year ahead? This is always the biggest question.
Yeah, for
sure. Cool that we talked about this, Teresa. Thanks for sharing your process.
I'm going to try really hard to get our listeners to actually comment, and I'm going to ask people to share what they do for their annual reflection and
planning. Yeah, let's make this a really nice conversation and thread about tips and tricks for annual planning. I would love that. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks, Petra.